Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com. Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Shut up and sit down.
All right, it's time for another episode of the Bowhunter Chronicles podcast. Today's episode may be slightly polarizing. We're going to be talking scents. So the next few podcasts, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be talking about tips, tricks, tactics, you know, to try and get you on the best opportunity to connect with a good deer this year, you know, whatever it is that you're chasing. You know, we're trying to talk to guys that are thinking outside of the box, using different things, different tricks, different tactics. And, you know, one of the things that I use in the pre-rut and rut is scents. So, I mean, I always have, even being a novice, poor hunter, however you want to say it, it's something that's allowed me to see a lot more deer and presented me with a lot more opportunities. So, wanted to talk to, someone who has, you know, effectively used scents, you know, throughout their whole lifetime and made a business out of it. So we're going to be talking to Josh Smith from, Wild Carrot, today. So, real quick, just want to get through some of the housekeeping type stuff. You know, everything is really taken off here. Temps in Michigan are a lot cooler right now, and the deer seem to be moving. Two of our Patreons have put down deer, Mark Slagle. I posted that picture, and I'll have another picture going up. Colin Pellegrin down in Louisiana just smacked a monster. Really cool-looking deer. I'd be real curious to see what the deer ages and how it scores. It's a nice one. And then, you know, my good friend Eric had a public land water access deer. You know, it's just really cool. This is the best time of year. And, you know, so it's just really exciting here. Getting into the rut, getting into this and getting excited to, you know, hear about all these stories, these guys shooting these deer and, you know, getting excited to get out there and get in the woods and, you know, the rut, this is our Christmas. So, what a great time. But I want to just say, you know, give a shout out to our latest Patreon, and I'm going to murder his name. Jacek Magazio, listening and supporting us through Patreon all the way from Switzerland. And, you know, I can't get a Bill Smith or a Rob Jones. Everybody's got these crazy names. So if you're a Bill Smith or a Rob Jones, please check out our Patreon account and, you know, make it easy on me. That would really be appreciated for sure. You know, we do quarterly giveaways this quarter that we're coming up on here for the end of the year is going to be giving away a saddle setup. You know, Patreon helps us to be able to do hunts, to keep the show going, to be able to, you know, start creating more video type content and things like that. You can check us out at patreon.com/ Bowhunter Chronicles podcast, or you can check out a link on our website. But if that's not for you, you just like listening along and you pick and choose your episodes and, you know, you like what we're doing, that's awesome. You could really help us out by leaving a review, even just clicking that 5-star button. You know, we got tons and tons of new listeners, tons and tons of downloads, and all of those likes, reviews, you know, 5-star reviews or actually writing out a review, all of that helps us in whatever algorithm it is so that we get to be in front of more and more people. And, you know, if you don't got time for that, it's not not your bag, no problem either. You know, just tell somebody about the podcast. If you liked this one, if you liked one of the other ones, if you didn't like it, you know, all publicity is good publicity. So, you know, tell somebody that we suck. Let them make the decision for themselves, but at least we'll get somebody else to be listening. But, you know, for every one of you out there, we appreciate everybody that listens, everybody that follows along. We appreciate all the feedback. If there's something you want to hear about, don't hesitate to reach out to us. And this should be a good one. Good luck this season. Man, it's getting exciting. So without further ado, enjoy the episode. Hey everybody, Adam back with another episode of the Bowhunter Chronicles podcast. John is still on his vacation at the time of this recording. Frank's in the woods trying to shoot a mutant, and I just got done cutting up the rest of the hindquarters of my deer, so it's just me. And we're sitting here tonight. We're going to talk to Josh with Wild Carrot Sense and Attractants, and you know, we don't do a lot of product placement or product stuff on this podcast, just because there's so many people that just either want to be on a podcast to sell you something, or, you know, it's not something that we believe in or something that we would use or anything like that. And so this is kind of one where, you know, I don't know if Josh didn't want to be on a podcast or anything like that, but I've been trying to get him on the podcast ever since I met him last year at ATA, because, you know, I killed my buck last year using Wild Carrot Sense just as a coincidence. And then we run into him, and he doesn't have a booth or anything like that. He's just got a backpack full of stuff. And he goes, well, here you guys go. Here's some samples and some hats and stuff like that. And then we were fortunate enough to have some conversation and some beers. And so we got him on the line here tonight. So how you doing tonight, Josh?
I'm doing well, Adam. How you doing?
You know, I'm doing good. I got a deer in the freezer and all these ideas of recipes and things like that. And I'm kind of just waiting on the text from Frank to say he shot one, and then we'll have some beers. So it's just...
Heck yeah. Yeah, it's hard to complain when you just broke the ice, man.
Right? Yeah, and this, let's say this early in the season, and, you know, we're headed to Missouri. You know, for the rut, you know, for first week in November. So it'll allow me some time to, you know, get some stuff done around the house and appease the wife and buy myself a little bit more breathing room come November. So that'll be good.
Well, that's mandatory, man. That's a good investment. I know how that goes. I've got four little ones of my own, and our most recent was born in mid-November. So that's a struggle that I'm going to be battling here in the next few weeks for sure.
Yeah, my wife's birthday is November 8th. Last year was the first year I was home for her birthday in like 6 or 7 years. So,
well, you screwed yourself. Then.
She's pretty understanding. Well, her dad is Frank, so she kind of knows what comes along with it.
Sure,
she's told me multiple times. Now, don't just tell me that you killed a deer for me on my birthday that I only worked when I was six.
Right.
So it'll only work for so long if you've got a birthday in November. Just a little pro tip. But
gotcha. Whatever it takes.
So give us a little bit about a background and Wild Carrot. And, you know, I asked you this at ATA, but like in the naming and all that, how do you come to be a urine peddler, I guess?
Yeah, well, I certainly never, you know, if you'd have asked me 10 years ago if I'd be sitting here talking to you about deer pee, I'd have laughed and said, heck no. But now just kind of, you know, the way life goes its course. I grew up hunting. I actually grew up in Michigan near Hastings. Hunted Berry County quite a lot with my dad and my grandpa. And my dad has always been kind of a hardcore scent guy, cutting bladders and tarsals and keeping them fresh and using them for scent in that regard. Never was much for anything store-bought, you know, tried a lot of different things and never had any consistent luck. You know, things are will happen and work from time to time and then not work from time to time. Even the best products are that way, but it just seemed like everything available at that time, and this was, you know, 20, 30 years ago, was pretty wildly inconsistent, aside from what he could harvest fresh. So he started doing that at a young age and then just kind of passed that on to me, you know, the methods that he used and the way that he went about using scent to his advantage and to gain a little bit of an edge. And just kind of happenstance decided to try to make some sort of package just for our use that could hold those tarsals and that fresh urine and keep it that way as long as possible. And we ended up using actually what was a protein pouch, you know, like the flexible packaging that protein powder comes in.
Okay.
Like whey protein. Uh-huh. He cut some of that up and got a heat sealer and just made our own little packs out of basically what is like a Mylar type of material. And it was very effective at keeping it fresh. It allowed no light transmission, which is key. And it kept out the oxygen, the aluminum in that packaging. That thin layer of aluminum did a great job of keeping out the oxygen as well. So it did a really good job of keeping things fresh. And we've always hunted with friends, you know. Had a lot of private land, family land, and friends who had land in Michigan, and so we hunted with a lot of different people, a lot of different friends, and he, you know, got to passing that stuff around, and everybody was really liking it. So fast forward a little bit, living in Tennessee now, still doing the same thing, you know, and using those pouches, and you know, at the recommendation of several people, finally decided to see what we could do to kind of mass produce it. And at that point, not even for sale, just for basically passing out to the people we hunt with. And it just sort of evolved from there. We ended up, you know, not what I would say perfecting the package, and ended up getting a patent for it, which took a few years, but got that done. And then we started working with a marketing company out of Nashville, just trying to come up with a name for our product and kind of imagery, logo type of thing. And they presented us, we presented them with some options, and they presented us with some options, and we liked what they chose. We liked Wild Carrot because it kind of is, it symbolizes a goal, you know, kind of like a carrot on a stick, like in the old Bugs Bunny cartoons, and sure. See him luring him out, you know, Elmer Fudd luring him out with a carrot on a stick. And that kind of was where it spawned. We liked it because we've always been into hunting because it's something fun we did with family and friends, and it was never a competitive type of thing, and it was always enjoyable time, lighthearted atmosphere, and that's kind of what we wanted to bring to the industry if we were going to come to the industry. So that's in short how we came to be.
And so from that, okay, so you've got the packaging. Where do you go from there? Because I would imagine that, well, before you were, these were deer you were shooting and all of your buddies and whatnot, and you were harvesting it yourself.
Yeah, yep.
Now what? You got this what? Excellent package.
Sure, yep. We made a ton of them, and then we had to fill them. So what we did basically was order bulk urines from every high-grade deer farm we could find and just tested them to see which ones were of the highest quality and which ones we could keep fresh the longest. And narrowed it down eventually to a singular farm in Pennsylvania. And that's where we source all of our urine from. We actually have another farm that we have a great relationship with. Should any issues arise with CWD and have an impact on a farm, on the farm we use in Pennsylvania, we have a backup plan. But we hope that that's not the case. We have a great relationship with the farm we use. intend to use them for a long time.
And so CWD has to have really, I mean, it's really polarizing. You know, it's a whitetail hunting buzzword. It's this big farce. It's the next plague, you know, depending on wherever you're at in the politics, or, you know, if it's affected your deer hunting ability to bait or this or that. How has it affected your industry, and, you know, what's kind of your, we'll say, more educated than the layman opinion or takeaway on the whole CWD thing?
Well, I usually find with most things, when you have something that's polarizing as CWD is, the truth generally lies somewhere in the middle. And with CWD, I don't think it's any different. I think that it is, it's an obvious health issue with deer, that no one's really certain of where it came from, what we're going to do about it, how we can neutralize it, if we can neutralize it, and what the long-term effects will be. There are plenty of scientific studies that are claiming this and that, and you can find just as many claiming the opposite. So it's kind of hard to sift through and find the truth if you're just an outsider looking in. But personally, I just, you know, coming into the industry at the time we did is definitely a risk. You know, CWD is obviously a prevalent talking point. You know, even in our home state, they just banned the use of natural urines for like a trial year. But I don't really see much effect on sales. You know, if you go down to the local Walmart, it's packed full of every kind of scent you can imagine, and every, you know, corn and all that, and we can't bait. We can't, you know, sales are, it's, I don't know who's buying, and I don't know who's using it, but they are.
Right.
So, you know, it's, we haven't really, we don't have numbers from pre-CWD scare to compare to, but as far as our business, it's been growing significantly in the last 3 years since we launched.
Okay. And so you don't really, I guess you just came in at a time when that's the way that you had to approach it. With all the rules regarding CWD, and if you wanted to be part of the game, you just had to play by their rules.
Exactly, we play the hand we were dealt. And the first thing we did was get the ATA certification. Our farm has the ATA certification, so all of our products are certified by the ATA to be CWD free. The deer are health inspected regularly, so we combat any issues with that. But we're kind of in a unique position because we didn't get into the industry looking to make a million. We loved to hunt and had a product that people really enjoyed using. So we thought, why not? And we have day jobs. We still work them. So the wild carrot thing is kind of a fun adventure for us. We take it seriously, but it's a lot of fun. And, you know, we just pray that it goes the way we want it to go. And if it doesn't, then that's the way it is. But it's been successful so far, and we've enjoyed it.
Awesome. So now we've got through kind of the nuts and bolts of it. Let's get to the fun stuff here, right? The stuff that guys want to hear about. You know, we're trying to do, you know, as we're into the season and you know, we've got listeners all over the country, and, you know, guys in Florida have 2-3, you know, ruts, you know, not just pre-rut and post-rut, you know, they, depending on where they're at geographically, ruts are hitting at different times and different things are going on. You know, so how do you see people typically using scents? Cause I know we had talked about this last year. And then how could they maybe be a little bit more effective in using them, you know, during different types of phases of the rut, I guess?
Sure, sure. Well, I'll go ahead and explain what we offer, and then we'll go from there.
Sure.
We have our packaging, basically, is their single-use tear-open packs. If you think of, like, single cigar pack you'd see at the gas station that come in a flexible foil package. It's very similar to that. I know you're familiar with it, but a lot of your listeners probably aren't. Mm-hmm. And there's a wick that's pre-moistened with the urine inside that's attached to the top of that package so that when you tear it open, your drag rag comes out and it's pre-soaked. And in our, they come in 10 packs, and in our 10 packs, we include a drag reel that has a clip on it to clip that lure to, and it extends out a couple feet so you can zip tie that reel to your boot with the included zip ties, and then you have the ability to make your scent trail wherever you need, and then you can unclip that thing and hang it up over mox grape or near your stand where you have a good shooting window. So that's kind of how we use them. And we offer those in the only laboratory certified doe estrus on the market. We have Dominant Buck, which is Dominant Buck urine with a tarsal gland extract. We have regular buck urine and regular doe urine. We also offer a synthetic that we've seen some great success with for those who are in no urine zones. That's one of our offerings for them. And as far as timing of season, you know, folks use them as a cover, folks use them as an attractant. Generally, we like to use the doe or buck urine as a cover in early season. They're very effective. They kind of act as a calming scent, you know, to cover up whatever odor you may have and to reassure the deer that there's fresh traffic in the area. So it kind of keeps them in a calm state. A lot of guys like to use that Dominant Buck scent early. The theory there is that it holds does. When you hold does in the pre-rut starts, you're going to have bucks. So that's one effective way of using the Dominant Buck. Obviously, the most popular way to use the Dominant Buck is during the rut to try and lure in that challenger. And we've seen great results with that as well. I think everybody's probably familiar with the uses of the doe in estrus. You know, from pre-rut, rut, post-rut, it's very effective at bringing in bucks. It's you know, we've got tons of trail cam footage, and a lot of folks out there have supplied us with pictures and videos, just awesome stuff of deer coming into the lures, and the efficacy kind of speaks for itself. So that's the basics of kind of how those scents are used at what time of year.
Yeah, so real quick, for anybody that isn't familiar with you know, my hunt last year, you know, I shot a 100-inch 10-point here in Michigan, which is a great deer, 3.5-year-old deer, and I'd killed a buck earlier in the year using some other scent. I don't know, I couldn't tell you what it is, just something that I had. I use scent in the rut quite often. And then I got home from the UP because, like I said, I'd been home for my wife's birthday this year or last year, and I was rustling through my hunting totes, and I found this sample pack or something of these wild carrot scents from the Bowhunter Box Club. They had come in there and they just got shuffled in my tote, so I grabbed, you know, two or three of them, whatever it was, and put them in my pack. Well, I got out to my stand, and was really not feeling it. It was raining. It was just snowing. It was really, really wet, and it was daylight by the time I got set up, and there was another guy's tree stand way behind me, where I'd 80 yards behind me, where, you know, over a mile back in here, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to put out some of these, one of these scents. And I pulled them out, and there was a Dominant Buck in the doe estrus. And I was like, well, I don't know when else I would use them. I mean, this seems like, you know, the time that I would use both of them. So I put them both out, hung them about 10 feet apart, and had a spike come by me. I grunted at him a couple times. And 2 minutes later, at 10-point walked on a line right to the sound of that grunt, and then turned and made a beeline for where those wicks were hanging. And he got an arrow about 14 yards from my tree. And he turned around and went 50 yards and fell over. So for the wild carrot stuff. I mean, like I said, we don't just say, okay, we got to have a scent guy on here. So we're gonna say, oh, we met that guy at ATA. He was probably a good, good guy to talk to. That's a product that I've used. I've used it once, and it's kind of like the broadhead that I'm shooting. Like, if I was the case study, it's the best scent in the world. You know, it's 100% effective.
Right.
So,
that's awesome.
So I don't know if that's the, the way that you would recommend using them, in unison like that, or.
Well, personally, I do that quite frequently. A lot of the time when I make my scent trail, if it's late October to mid-November or a little bit later, I'll double up that dominant buck and the doe and estrus on the drag and hang them. So I'll drag it in to kind of simulate a chase as far as the scent trail, and then hang that, within shooting distance of my stand upwind. And upwind of me and downwind of where I'm expecting deer travel. And they're effective, man. They really are. I killed my largest buck to date on a doe and estrus, just nose to the ground, coming right in on my scent trail. And that was a nice 10-point I shot in Kentucky.
I don't know. This is my I had an experience when I was in Ohio. And we were tracking a buck that one of the guys that was with us had hit, and we were walking down these train tracks, and some deer had gone across right in front of us, and this is in the dark, and then it was like we were walking into a fog of like doe piss, like estrus, like it was like a cloud, and it was just like one of those like eye-opening type moments, because I would say for most guys or generally speaking, if you've got a buck chasing a doe out in front of you, or, you're hunting that time of year when it's the rut and there's chasing and stuff going on, you generally aren't shooting the doe. So I think a lot of people know kind of like the smell of a running buck, they've killed a buck that was chasing a doe or was breeding a doe or something like that. But generally when they have that chase, it's, somewhere out in front of you. And then by the time you get up there, like the scent has dissipated or something.
Sure.
But I can tell you it was like, it was on us. It was like a fog of estrus. And it really kind of opened my eyes to see, like, when that's going on, when they're chasing, like, why all those bucks are able to smell it. I mean, it doesn't take like a, they've got these great noses and they can probably smell that from a long ways away. But I mean, when you're right in the thick of it, it was like you could cut it with a knife.
Right. Yep. Yeah, a lot of people are probably more familiar with that dominant buck, like you said. Somebody who shoots a ruddy buck, throw him in the back of a blazer and head home, and you just smell it the whole way. That tarsal gland, just rank. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the estrus doe is very similar. They have a very powerful scent, and estrus doe urine has been identified with over 100 different substances in that urine. Pheromones being just one of those things. And there are some strong scents in there that a buck, like you said, can smell a long ways off. And occasionally, even a human nose can pick up on those if you're close enough, or if you're there recent enough, you can smell, if you have a keen sense of smell, when those deer have traveled through. It's similar to elk. A lot of Western hunters will tell you, and anybody who's elk hunted, really, and been close to a bull, ruddy bull, you can smell that son of a gun. And it's similar, their sense of smell is obviously much more intense than ours.
Yeah, for us, elk was like cattle. It was real easy, to tell. And when listening to podcasts, and we were preparing for our hunt going out there. You know, they said, oh, if you're close, you'll smell them. And it's like, that's exactly what it is. It's like being in a cow pasture.
Right.
And it's pretty powerful stuff. So when you're coming up with these scents and so you said you're sourcing them and you were testing all of these different urines from here, there, and everywhere. What sets them apart or makes, you know, one different than the other? Wild Carrot, Tinks, Still Steam, and, you know, Golden Estrus. You know, if you have the ability to buy them from here, from there, from everywhere, how is it not just the same stuff rebottled or rebranded?
Sure, that's a good question. It really starts at the collection. I mean, everything hinges on the collection. If your collection facility is tainted, if it's dirty, if it's not kept up and clean, if you have fecal contamination, it can really degrade that urine quickly. How they handle the urine when it's collected is key. Our farm does a great job with that. They have food grade stainless collection facility that they power wash regularly, daily. And the collection itself is in a multi-level barn, and these deer come in and out of the barn at their own leisure. They know that there's food in there, so it's not like they're harassed and corralled. They go in and out when they're ready. The deer are separated, obviously, so that we can have different urines collected at different times. But yeah, it all hinges on collection and how the farm itself handles the urine. And from there, what you use for your packaging determines what kind of quality you're going to have when you bust that thing out when you're ready to go to your stand. And that's where we really shine. We start with a great quality urine, like I said, that is top notch. And our packaging does a great job of keeping it that way until you're ready to pull that trigger.
And so with these different farms, these different companies and different, you know, collection methods and et cetera, are there proprietary methods, proprietary deer or farms? You know, so it's, I mean, deer have a finite life cycle. And so is there a better class of deer than, you know, I mean, I don't know that there's only one, you know, species of deer or whatever, but is there better, you know, you know what I'm trying to say.
I know what you're saying. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, there definitely. Deer health is a huge factor. You know, if you have a sickly deer that you're collecting urine from and you go to use that as a lure or as a scent attractant, a healthy deer in the wild is going to smell that and know there's an issue. They're going to know there's something wrong. They can smell an illness. You know, their sense of smell is insane. So our farm does an excellent job of keeping a very healthy herd, constantly monitoring. You know, they have veterinary staff that keep these deer healthy constantly, making sure they're in great shape. And that's a big part of it.
Okay. And so, you know, there's, you know, I kind of gave my little anecdote as far as what I've done, you know, with your sense, but, you know, when I'm hunting the rut, and I know Frank and Ernie and, I've seen John, use scents as well during the rut. There's so many guys out there that will say, you know, all of this stuff, any of these attractants, you know, urine, any of this stuff is going to be pixie dust, that you don't need that, and it's just going to spook deer, or, you know, it's going to do more harm than good. You don't need that. You just need to do your homework. You know, you need to play the wind, and that's all you need to do. You don't need any of that stuff. You're just throwing good money away.
Sure.
You know, how do you combat that sort of thinking that it's not just a marketing ploy?
Well, you don't give it too much weight. I mean, honestly, you know, there are plenty of guys out there that are that way, and it's crazy how polarizing the use of scents is in itself. you have a large crowd of guys that are just like you described. You know, I don't need that. I play the wind. You know, I'm a good hunter. I study my deer. I keep tabs and run trail cams, plant food plots, do all this stuff. And it's funny because they're sitting there telling you what you don't need to do to kill deer while they're describing all the things they do that you don't need to do to kill deer. You know? So it's like you just kind of let them go and don't give it too much weight. You know, a lot of the time those guys are the same ones using a range finding bow sight. So it's just like it what we do, our goal is to give a hunter an edge, and there's no argument there. You know, I'm not in the business of trying to convince someone who doesn't use sense that they need to use sense. But what we do is offer a quality product for the guy that knows the value of a good scent.
Okay. Yeah, I think, I don't know. The further I get down this road of trying to locate, target, create a plan, and kill big bucks, the more guys that I talk to do it in the early season, because the rut, everything kind of goes out the window. And, you know, these bucks are less patternable. You know, they're going to travel. They're not going to be, you know, exactly where you expect them. You know, so everything kind of changes. For myself, most of my successes come during the rut. A lot of these guys will say, I'm not a very good rut hunter for that reason. Myself, I say, well, I'm better during the rut because I didn't put in all this extra work and try and, you know, I mean, I'm trying to do that now, but to figure out where these deer are exactly bedded so you can go in and pick them off systematically. I just say that there's a good deer around here. There should be a good deer here. This is where the does are going to be in the rut. So this is where he should be. And for those cruising deer, for those deer that are actively seeking hot does, if you've got does and you've got scent out, I mean, to me, it seems like a no-brainer, and it's worked for me in the past. So I think it's kind of one of those, you know, tools in your toolbox, I guess. But on the other side of that is, no matter what it is, whether it's if you, you know, don't tie your left boot, whatever is your good luck charm or like gives you a little bit more confidence, if you think that that's going to be the straw that broke the camel's back, that's what's going to be that thing to bring him over that extra 100 yards or 50 yards or whatever. You know, if it makes you more confident, then you should be using it anyways, because if you go out there and you're not confident, then what are you doing? Right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. You know, anything you can do to give yourself a better chance, gain a little confidence, it's not going to hurt. But, you know, as far as using sense, that's one aspect, but the science is there. I mean, it's how they breed. You know, like this is what drives these deer. The reason you see those bucks chasing is because they smell that doe in estrus. So it's really difficult for me to spend a lot of time arguing with somebody that is anti-scent, because it's just like, you know, how do you, have you ever had a dog that was in heat in your house, in your home?
No.
Yeah, no.
Male dogs.
When I was growing up, we had a Weimaraner. And she was a great dog, and we intended to have her bred for puppies. And she would come into heat, and every damn dog for miles around would be in our yard harassing constantly. And it's no different with a deer. You know, they can smell that a long way off. Science has proven that. And it's just it's a moot point to argue it in my mind. But there's still a large group of people out there that just don't, you know, have a drive to use sense. And that's fine. Like, personally, I'm not a fan of mechanical broadheads. I don't give a shit if you use them. That's fine. You know, like, if you're a fan of them, that's awesome, man. If you're out in the woods hunting and using them, good. That's great. So that's kind of the stance I take as far as that goes. But yeah, it's the science just really drives what we do. It's hard to debate, you know, and then we have all these excellent videos off our trail cams of bucks just tearing down mock scrapes that we make with our scents, you know. And if I can put out a camera and get a daytime picture of a good buck on a scent, then I could have been sitting there and shot him. You know, like it's not really that much different.
And so,
a matter of timing.
You said that you'd done a bunch of different research and trying to figure out what does spook deer and things like that. Can you go into a little bit of the testing and the everything that you guys kind of do to kind of debunk some of that stuff?
Yeah, sure. Some of that, one of the kind of common schools of thought is not using estrus early. A lot of guys are really wary of putting that out even like mid to late October for fear that they're using estrus too early in the season and that it's going to have a negative impact. And we haven't really seen any evidence of that at all. I mean, we run estrus lures year-round on trail cams just to see what happens, and we get deer activity all times of the year. Obviously, it's hot and heavy in November, but we have not seen any evidence at all of any kind of spooking from any scent that we have. It just, you know, deer are fickle creatures by nature. It's how they're alive. So, you know, anything out of the ordinary is going to tip them off, and we don't have any evidence of that at all. Obviously, like I said, there are more effective times to use, but we don't see much negativity, any negativity, as far as timing. And another common school of thought is dominant buck urine. Putting out dominant buck urine early, a lot of people will say that you might drive a doe into estrus and throw off the cycle, and you know, that's just not something we've ever seen. Never seen any sort of change in behavior from does off of a dominant buck scent. So, you know, as far as our research goes, obviously we're just a couple guys. So there's a ton of research to be done yet, but in our experience, you know, we just haven't really seen any of the negativity that some folks are concerned with.
Well, I think that's an awesome caveat to be able to say, well, you know, that's just what we found. That's not the end all be all. I think that really kind of, you know, personifies kind of what you've been saying, right? Is that you're not in this to just make money. It's just something that you guys, you know, started doing like as a family, and you know, it's just kind of grown into something else, and something that you guys, even if wild carrot goes away, you're still going to be doing it because it's what you've always done and what you believe in. Type thing. It's not saying, well, ours is the best and you know, you can buy any of those other ones and it's not going to be, you know.
No, you won't. Of course, I believe firmly that we make the best product. But I don't push that onto people. That's up to you to decide, you know, get yourself some and try it out. And it sounds like in your case, you probably agree. But yeah, it's, you know, it's not something we try. I find in the industry that most of the time when people tell you this is the best thing out there, that's the best thing out there, that it just so happens that that's what they got for free. So it's not always credible when you hear someone saying, oh, this is the absolute best thing you can get, you know. But when guys like you say, hey man, I used it, shot this great buck, that's all we asked for, you know.
Well,
if it makes your hunting experience positive, then that's a win for us.
Well, and like our friend Scott, you know, Scott Spitzley, I'd seen him posting and reposting whatever things on Instagram, like for Wild Carrot. And after I killed that buck, I just messaged him on Instagram, and I hadn't even met him before that or whatever, but I'd just seen it. And I was like, hey, do you do work for them or do you know this company? He's like, yeah, I do. I'm like, well, I just killed this buck with this stuff. Like, you know, who do I send the picture to? Like, you know, it's pretty cool. Like for me.
Yeah.
And it, again, like even like, I was talking to my brother this morning, telling him that I was going to be talking to you. And he's like, you know, I remember you saying that last year. He's like, where can I get it? Or where is it available? Because it, I think that was another one of the things where if you're not familiar with the company, and that's a double-edged sword, right? Because there's the guys that are out there shoving things down your throat saying it's the greatest thing ever. And then there may be something else like this that you haven't heard of, and the name doesn't scream, you know, it's not Buckslayer 99 or you know, right. You know, whatever. Yeah. So it might not resonate.
Yeah. Well, we intended not to come across as the hardcore badass. You know, there's plenty of that. That's really not our market. And I think that's pretty well evidenced by the folks that we have great relationships with and just the community that we're involved with. Just a lot of great people.
And so how has the CWD ban and the synthetics changed? I mean, so you guys went into this from a history of, you know, harvesting this stuff from deer that you've killed. And then how does that transition into like this very scientific world of trying to, I mean, I and this is only me, you know, hypothesizing, right? But like,
sure,
there's got to be, you know, I'm a pharmacist, there's a pharmacy background, chemistry, like there has to be the going into synthetics. It's not just like, well, this is kind of like that. I would have to imagine that there's a whole shit ton of chemistry that's going into trying to replicate something that to fool, you know, a deer's nose, right?
Yeah, for sure. To a certain degree, but you also have to remember that deer are super curious by nature. You know, there are a lot of guys out there that promote pissing in scrapes, mm-hmm. that like personally will urinate in a scrape and talk about how effective it is, how effective it can be. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that mammal urine is very similar after a degradation period of X amount of time. But what happens in that time is what we focus on. You know, if you're out there, let's say you go out, you're a guy that pees in your own scrapes, and that's how you make your mock scrapes. Well, as long as you're not immediately hunting over that thing, that's probably fine. But if you're wanting to make a scent drag or wanting to freshen a mock scrape and then sit it, that's not necessarily a great idea. And anyone who's ever had a huge glass of coffee and taken a leak can tell you why. You know, anyone, if you've ever eaten asparagus and taking a piss, then you know exactly why that's not a great idea. That scent will dissipate in an X amount of time, but how long that takes is variable. So there are too many unknowns in that for us. You know, we like to be a little more precise with our approach, use something natural. And our synthetic is actually all natural as well. It's a synthetic deer urine, but it's an all natural product. And it's proprietary. It's something we kind of were tinkering with and then stumbled into. In essence, it's a spinoff that came about by means of a way that we were storing and keeping our urine fresh. And that's all I'm going to tell you.
Well, when you said it's a synthetic deer urine, it's synthetic deer urine. This is just stupid, but the only thing I can think of is like you got these deer that you're not supposed to be given hormones, and now they got to take a piss test, and you're strapping this synthetic piss on them so that they can pass the test.
Yeah.
Like in the human realm.
Right. You're right. We've had good luck with our synthetic. You know, obviously, we are firm believers in our natural product, but that's not always feasible for people in CWD ban zones and whatnot. So we were tasked with coming up with something that was effective, that would meet the criteria of those states. And I think we did. I think we came out with something really great. I think it's very effective. So we're really looking forward to implementing that in the future. And that offering is available now.
And so, like, for guys like my brother, listeners that aren't familiar with Wildcare, is it available, like, in stores or only online? Or where can they go and get some?
We sell direct on our website, wildcareatsense.com. We also sell on Amazon, and we are carried by Kinsey's, the distributor that supplies most of your archery shops.
Okay.
So most of your mom and pops, we actually have a deal going with Rural King right now. So we hope to be in Rural King soon. It's kind of a long and arduous process, but it's moving forward. So we're looking forward to that. But I think right now we're happy with where we're at, and we're enjoying the support that we're offering to your small town mom and pop archery shops. You know, it's products like ours. We're basically like an artisan deer urine, and it's something that's available only in these small shops right now or direct through us. So it gives you an incentive to seek these guys out. You know, you're not just going and spending your money at these big box stores. You're spending your money in a small shop, and it's going somewhere that's going to support a guy that wants to take his kids fishing this weekend, you know, or something like that. So it's something we're pretty proud of. We really enjoy that aspect. And that's kind of the foundation of who we are. You know, when you order a 10-pack of Wild Carrot Scents, you're directly funding, you know, me taking my kids camping, you know, me getting my kids outdoors, you know, and it, obviously that's great for selfish reasons, but it's personal. It's something that means a lot to us. You know, it's not just a number on a sheet. Every order that is shipped from Wild Carrot Scents is packaged by one of three pairs of hands, mine, my father's, or my mother's. So, you know, it's as personal as it gets. We like to kind of pride ourselves on that fact.
Well, that's something that I didn't know. That's, you know, that's really awesome. That's, you know, it's hard. I mean, you know, just doing what we do with the podcast and all of this and full-time jobs. I mean, that's why you're only talking to me, because we're balancing real life and hunting and, you know.
Heck yeah. And exactly, man. That's why you struggle so hard to get me on this phone, man.
Right. So.
But yeah, happy to do it. And, you know, I want to take a second and thank you for having me. I didn't say that earlier, but I really do appreciate it.
Yeah, like I said, it was literally like a month ago or something, like some big outfit pushing something wanted to be on here to talk about, you know, some scents or something that they were trying to sell. And it's just like, you know, I talked to John and I talked to Frank and, you know, it was like that what we want to be about, you know, is big companies, big things. And that to me is not who we are. You know, we're just regular guys. I'm sitting here looking at Dora the Explorer and a princess phone and a princess house, sitting in my basement,
sure,
drinking a Bud Light.
You know? Now I'm sitting in my backyard next to my fire pit with a Yingling right now.
You bastard.
So I know exactly what you mean.
They don't have, Yingling does not distribute to Michigan. So
I know. That's too bad.
That is too bad. But,
well, I frequent the state, so maybe I can bring you some next time.
Yeah, I'm not that far from Hastings, I can tell you that right now.
Cool.
But so give us a little bit, you know, maybe one of the stories from the old days, you know, before Wild Carrot, of maybe like a memory like with your dad and harvesting some, sure, tarsal glands, and how you use them in like a success story or something like that.
Sure. Well, I've grown up always as a younger guy, hunted with my dad and my grandpa, like I said. Well, some of the best memories I have are hunts that we had when I was a kid, whether it was going out west with my grandpa on an elk hunt when I was 14, or turkey hunting in Missouri when I was in middle school. I actually, when I was in middle school, I got called to the principal's office when I was in eighth grade because I missed 32 days of school going on hunting trips. And I thought I was going to be in trouble getting called down there. And I went down to the office, and the principal said, you know, I heard you just got back from Colorado on an elk hunt. And I said, yes, sir. And he said, you got any pictures? I said, I don't have on me, but I can bring some tomorrow. You know, we didn't have cell phones or pictures or anything like that back then. So just the Polaroids. But Yeah, you know, Dad harvesting those tarsal glands from whitetails that he had killed, and being right there with him and seeing him. Honestly, one of the things that spurred the packaging is seeing him harvest those glands and then going back to the cabin after we were butchering the deer and making lunch and smelling that shit on your hands and you're eating lunch. That was kind of one of the earliest memories I have of, like, we need to figure out a better way to do this. You know, like, this is not good to have on your hands. So that's kind of one of the things that brought about the packaging and the ease of use and the cleanliness, you know, those single use packages. Basically, they come in a resealable pouch, the 10 pack does, so that what I do is dump the contents out into my hunting pack, those single use packs, and then I have that resealable pouch that I'll put the trash back in when I'm done with my hunt. Throw the used lures in there, zip it up, put it back in my pack, and it keeps the used lure from getting contamination into my bag.
Okay.
So that's a kind of a memory and a segue into where we are. But yeah, just a lot of stories like that, man. I remember hunting with my dad at, I was probably, I don't know, I might have been like 9 years old. And we didn't have a lot of money at the time, and we were hunting public land. And he didn't even have a tree stand. And he found a tree with a great big crotch and about 12 feet up with a hollow in it, and getting up there, climbing up in a tree and having nothing, you know, just like looking at the industry now and looking at the hunts we went on back then. And it's just like, that's the stuff I like, you know, those memories are the things I like you said, regular guys, you know, not, I love great gear, but not decked out in $2,500 worth of gear to hunt, you know, probably wearing blue jeans, you know, sitting in a tree. Just good memories of simple hunts as a kid, not always successful, you know, but that's hunting. Just seeing it for what it was at an early age just helped kind of make me into who I am.
Yeah. A lot of that reminds me of Frank, you know, he told that story on the podcast of shooting a buck at 50 yards sitting on a limb and the people watching it, you know, from the road in a Buick, and they drove the Buick right out into the field
right next to him.
And yep. But you know, yesterday we were butchering that deer and the bladder was still in there when we hung it up, and he's like, here, we're gonna keep that. And my brother's like, what are you gonna do with that? Went and got a butter bowl out of the recycle and poured it in there, and he's like, smell that, it doesn't smell as bad as you think it would.
Not when it's fresh.
No,
yeah.
Put it right in my brother's right in his face.
Yeah, that's the best, man. And that's the best. And if you can figure out how to store that and keep that fresh that way and make it convenient to use, you've got something. And that's kind of where we feel like we are.
Yeah. You know anybody that can help us out with that?
What's that?
I said, you know anybody that can help us out with that?
Yeah, I do. I actually happen to know somebody that already helped you out with it. You just had to be patient on the mail.
Awesome, man. Yeah. So what do you got going on this season? Are you going to be able to? That's one thing that we found. And I can tell you, you know, from talking to you last year at ATA, when you're like, I don't know if I'm going to be here next year or tomorrow, or, you know, we were a day late either way because you were going to hunt a lease or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, what do you got planned? We've met a lot of people like throughout the industry and talked to a lot of product guys and stuff like that. And it seems like the more people that own companies and do stuff like that, the less they get to hunt because of all the stuff that goes into it. And this being the busy time, right?
Yeah, it's hard, man. It is. It's like you know, you get into the industry because you love to hunt and you want to sort of amplify that lifestyle and do it as much as you can. And you realize once you're in that it's hard. It's hard to make time to actually go and do it because the business end of things can consume you. But it's something that we're very intentional on doing. You know, we don't miss hunting. I mean, we're out there, you know, we make sure that that's sort of the fuel that drives us. And without the actual hunting, you lose focus. You lose sight of what's important. So it's very important to us to spend as much time as we can in the woods. So, yeah, I'm doing a good bit of hunting this season. I had planned on doing an archery elk hunt this past mid-September in Colorado. My grandparents have a little cabin out there, and they go out every year. Still elk hunting, my grandma and grandpa both. You know, she was successful on a cow last year, and they're just great hunters, man, and it was a blessing to be able to watch and learn and just be a part of that as a kid and as an adult. And I was really looking forward to doing that, but my grandpa was diagnosed with cancer in the spring, so he's not doing so great, and it just wasn't an option to all be out there together, so I wasn't going to go. And we're looking at the potential of possibly a late October, late this month mule deer hunt. If he's in shape, if he's feeling up to it, then I'll be out there. But if he's not, then I'll be in Michigan, which is where he lives, and I'll be taking him whitetail hunting. So I'm looking forward to either one of those things.
Yeah, that's tough. You know, it's a terrible thing for anybody, but you know, when you've got someone who's so used to being able to go out in the woods and go, and it's such a big part of their life, and then, you know, that gets taken away from them in any way, shape, or form, and it's, you know, that's the one thing that, you know, kind of brings you all together. That's the worst. So I feel for you, man, and we, you know, wish him the best for sure.
Well, I really appreciate that, man. It's no fun, but it's important for me to not get too caught up in that and to instead focus on making the most of what we got. So
exactly,
that's what we're trying to do. You know, we've spent a lot of time over this past summer going back and forth from our home here in Tennessee up to Michigan and taking the kids up there and catching some bluegill with grandpa and just spending some time and doing anything we can outside. I was actually, this past spring, shortly after the diagnosis, I was able to swing through there on my way home from a Wisconsin turkey hunt with the Breaking Point fellows. Swung through Michigan on my way home and got to go out in the turkey woods with grandpa again and find some morels and just enjoy that, man. We didn't get on a bird, but I didn't care. It didn't matter. We caught a few fish, found some morels, and ate like king. Just enjoyed ourselves.
Yeah, and it, you know, that's one of the things that we push here pretty hard is, you know, well, hell, you can see from the deer that I just harvested, you know, it's more about the experience and being out there and being able to share it with somebody, because you can, like we say it all the time, but, you know, you can kill all the 150-inch deer that you want to, but if you don't have anybody to share it with, if you don't have that, you know,
right, yeah,
you know, if you want to paint yourself in a corner and not be able to share it, not be with your family, and you know, be able to hang out and share and laugh and all of that. I mean, our turkey season was, you could argue that it was either the best season or the worst season. But it was definitely probably the most fun season that any of us have had, because of all the times that we screwed up this year. I mean, and it's exactly that. So I mean, you got somebody to share it with. So yeah, those, it's, you know, I got a really good close group of friends around us, and you know, our mantra is pretty much just making memories, and you know, that's what happens, good, bad, or indifferent. It's like, you know, is it memorable? Yep. Well,
that's it, man. It's easy, especially if you're involved in the industry at all. It's all too easy to get sucked into that booner mentality, you know, where you feel like you can't shoot anything that's not 4 years old at least. You know, it's just, it's too easy to fall into that trap, and there's so much pressure on social media and stuff. And I don't even think it's all intentional. It just comes across as like, if you want to be a good hunter, you got to do X, Y, Z. And it's, you know, it's too hard. It's too easy to fall into that trap. You know, the real deal is just getting out there, being in the woods And that's something that I came to terms with over the last year, pretty hard. You know, my mentality for hunting now, I try to involve my kids. I try to look at it like I'm taking a walk in the woods. If I happen to see a deer, hell yeah. If not, that's okay. You know, it's more about the time spent. It's more about enjoying creation and just hanging out outside, man. You know, it's a dying thing in our society. So it's crucial to make the most of that time.
Oh, that's 100%. You know, we cut up that deer yesterday, and my daughter's, you know, she's 4 now. She's saying, you know, when are we going to have some venison, Daddy? Yeah.
Right.
You know, her cousin's there.
Sounds like soon.
Yeah. That her, you know, her cousin is saying, oh my gosh, you know, because of the CWD, like, the deer doesn't even have a head. And she's going, that's not for girls. And my daughter's looking at her and she goes, well, kind of sometimes it is. It's just like a whole different dichotomy. Last year, you know, we were eating roadkill and my daughter was cutting up back straps with a butter knife, asking for a sharper knife. So
Right. It's
like, it's all about what they see and what you can expose them to. And, you know, we hope that, you know, you and I, when, you know, we're grandparents and, you know, that our grandkids want to come up and, you know, cut up deer and go turkey hunting and do a little bluegill fishing. So, I mean, it's all about starting that next generation right now, and I'm doing my best. And it certainly sounds like you are too, and getting them involved in, you know, the hunting, fishing. But, you know, both of us have, you know, kind of a kind of way into, or a, you know, for me, it's just a little bit of a peephole or whatever into the hunting industry. And, you know, you talk about that next generation, you know, we could be bashing on other hunters and saying, you can't shoot that and all sorts of different things. Or, you know, I can hand my daughter a butter knife and say, look what we got.
And, right.
You know, exactly. look at all the steaks and all the venison and all the chili and everything that we're going to have from this. And, you know, it's a definite double-edged sword. If you want to be famous or you want to be, you know, so narcissistic that you want everybody just to look at everything that you've done, well, that doesn't bode well for the next generation.
No, and I think you got to be active in making sure that doesn't happen. I think if you're not, then it's easy to slide into that, you know, right, where everything hinges on your success being nothing more than the score of the buck, you know, and that's no good.
Right.
In my opinion, that's no good at all, man.
100%.
So, yeah, I'm right there with you. You know, if you want to go out and shoot something that you're happy with and eat it, do it. That's all there is to it, man.
And, you know, there's nothing wrong with setting goals for yourself, but I think it's how you portray that to other people. And, you know, I think with, you know, kind of what you said about the way that you guys are running the business and the way that you view everything over there at Wild Carrot, while you're, you know, adamant that you guys have the best packaging, the best process, and the best product out there, it doesn't really matter, you know, if you want people to use your stuff, but you're not going to go around bashing other people and saying that. And I think that's a real testament to, you know, you as a person and your family and in the business itself. So, you know, I just really appreciate, you know, that viewpoint, being able to, you know, still be active in the industry, promote a product, and be, you know, have some, be the humble, or, you know, not be an asshole, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. For sure, man. Yeah, but that's exactly right. That's the truth.
But yeah, I mean,
yeah, I appreciate that for sure. And I don't mean to say that, you know, 150-inch deer doesn't get my heart pumping so bad I can't even shoot, because it does. You know, it gets me excited for sure. But the important thing is to be just as excited about a nice little 8 point or 7 point, you know, any, whatever it is. If it's a, let's say you just started hunting with a traditional bow and a spike walks in, you know, if you get a clean kill on him, then bam, that's a trophy, you know.
Oh, you know, one of our listeners, you know, I met him, we went and sat down at one of the Rinella podcasts, and I talked to this guy, and like we go back and forth, and you know, he was asking me about this spot, and we kind of talked back and forth, and he said, I went and checked it out, and he said there was a cute little 6 point and a doe, you know, when he walked in there to do some scouting. And I was like, well, what are your goals? And he said, I just want to kill something ethically and cleanly with a traditional bow. And I'm like, dude, if you kill that 6 point with a traditional bow, that is a feat. You know, that's right. that's an amazing thing. So, you know, I think,
or even for a lot of guys, you know, there are a lot of hunters out there that are new to the sport or that have been putting in a lot of time and haven't been successful, for even with a compounder rifle, if you kill a buck like that, you know, then that's still a trophy.
Oh, you know, it's, yeah, we're not rifle hunters over here.
We've
all killed deer with a rifle, and you know, just it's that same thing, you know. I mean, and I struggled with it a little bit last year or the year before, one of the two, but the more I learn about deer hunting and trying to figure these animals out, and you know, I had to say, like, man, I'm kind of handicapping myself, because if I went out in gun season, I'd have a whole, you know, another opportunity, and then like I get smacked in the face with, yeah, there's 10 million other guys out there with rifles, and right. you grew up in Michigan, so you know what it's like, gun season around here. It's not,
yeah, they call it the Orange Army for a reason.
Yeah, nothing nothing I want to go out into, but yeah, I mean, with a bow, any harvest is a trophy, and the problem is, and it's a problem or not, you know, there's people that don't want to post their stuff on social media because it's not big enough. It doesn't meet the 140-inch standard, you know. You know, there's people that shoot something, and there's that whole ground shrinkage, and you know, that's not a new term, but the social media says it doesn't matter, and it's the internet warrior who hides behind, you know, whatever, and we'll say, well, should have given him another year, should have did this, should have did that. And, you know, I kind of have a problem with these people that say, you know, I could have shot a buck like that, I could have shot 100 bucks like that, you know, like the one that I shot, right? But
sure,
until you've done it, and I mean, like for me personally, I've coined myself the world's worst bow hunter. like I've messed up on so many deer that I know like exactly all the things that can go wrong on that 100%, you know, no brainer, slam dunk, 20 yard shot. And, you know, that I could have killed him. Well, you didn't. So, you know, it might not have panned out the way that you, that you thought. You know?
Exactly. Yeah. And I, you know, some of my most memorable hunts, are hunts where I've had deer come in close and I never took a shot. You know, mm-hmm. Some of the greatest moments in the woods are having a, you know, 2-year-old, 6 or whatever it might be, come cruising through right under your stand and knowing that you could jump out of there with a knife and get him. Just, you know, just watching. And there's something to that feeling of knowing that you're there and he doesn't know it. You know, that's just memorable.
Yeah,
and can be just as much fun as taking a buck. It's whatever, you know, there's so many different degrees of success, and my success and your success might not be the same, and there's nothing wrong with that.
But the thing is like, what's funny is I've said the exact same thing. Like, there's nothing cooler to me than not even picking my bow up and just sitting and watching them, and them being just completely oblivious.
Right.
You know, because you're kind of like at the peak, you're like at the pinnacle, right? You've you've decided, you know, not to kill him, or to, in my case, just fling an arrow at him and pray that you didn't get too excited. So, but yeah, and I think that there's so much pressure, unnecessary, right? There's so many guys out there, and you know, guys that we talk to regularly, you know, that we've just met through the podcast that, you know, have questions or haven't killed a lot of deer, or you know, they want to just kill this big buck, but they don't know what to do or how to do it. And we don't know either. I mean, we kill deer all day long. But it's not like we're out there chasing 140s every day. You know, we're
right.
You know, Frank's at his level where he's just going to kill buck, whatever. You know, and I'm still learning every day, every podcast, every person that I talk to. You know, I'm picking their brain, trying to learn something, and then pass that along to the listener, because, you know, if you think that you're the best hunter, that, you know, you're going to outsmart these deer every day, I mean, they have like two jobs in life, and one of them is to stay alive. And so they got a lot of time to focus on not dying, right?
Right, right.
So unless you have that amount of time to kill that one animal, then I think, you know, there's still work to be done there. But that, like I say, that's why I wanted to have you on here and talk a little bit of tactics and, you know, talk about using sense effectively. And, you know, for those guys that are looking for, you know, maybe their first buck harvest, maybe, you know, they always see him, but they're not able to close the deal or whatever. You know, I just wanted to have you on here and kind of go through the use of sense and stuff like that. So I really appreciate you coming on and taking the time, you know, with it being in the season and with family and everything, you know, everything that's going on. You know, I really appreciate it, Josh, and thanks so much.
Yeah, man, thanks for having me. I really enjoy what you guys do. I think you're a good voice in the industry, man. I think your approach is solid, and I really like, you know, your mindset. I think it's where it should be.
Well, I really appreciate that. You know, this is, you know, before the podcast, this is who we were and what we do anyway. So now I just get to talk to cool people about stuff that I'm interested in, and it's
fun. It's a lot of fun.
I get to share it with other people. And so if people have questions or anything like that, how can they get in touch with you or, you know,
we're on Instagram or Facebook, Wild Carrot Deer Attractant, Wild Carrot Sense. I'm on Instagram and Facebook, or Instagram is Wild Carrot Josh. Get on there, shoot us a message, go to our website, shoot us an email, several routes of contact, and we'll answer any of them and help you out as best we can.
Well, awesome. Good luck to you this season, and hopefully you'll be able to make it back out to Colorado with your grandpa there for the mule deer hunt. But, you know, next time you swing through Michigan, get a hold of me, and I'll pick up that yingling, huh?
I'll do it, man. I'll do it. And I really appreciate you having me on, man.
Yep. No problem. Thanks, Josh.
Yep. We'll see you.
Shut up and sit down. Chef Jean-Paul Bourgeois, and the whole crew here at Duck Camp Dinners every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. Birds up in the sky.
Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Every Monday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.